Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Another post-game episode of Locked On Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. Well, it's a much happier post-game episode today than it was yesterday, because this time the Rockets actually got the win on Friday night. They were down 8 points with 2 minutes to go, and they came back and won. Forced overtime, took care of the Bulls in overtime, 121-117. Rockets now 37-17 on the year. It wasn't the prettiest game. And certainly it doesn't make up for losing a 20-point lead with 8 minutes to go on Thursday night, but it's one they at least gutted their way through. And if you had lost both of these games, it would have felt a little bit disastrous. At least now you've won two of the three games on the homestand. The Rockets certainly are not where they need to be to scrape out a 4-point win at home against the Bulls without Jimmy Butler playing. That's not exactly ideal. But for the Rockets, as I've said for a while, we know they're not all the way back. You're simply trying to buy time. The Rockets have three off days before getting back into it next week on Tuesday against the Orlando Magic. So at this point, you just have to hope they use the off days to get better. We did see a little bit of a turnaround tonight with the Rockets. Eric Gordon, 21 points off the bench, 8 of 17 shooting. This was by far his best game in a while. Trevor Ariza, just 3 of 7. That's a big improvement for him, and he actually did have a couple of big shots late in the game. The story, Ryan Anderson, 0 of 7, 0 points in his 33 minutes, just 4 rebounds. He was a non-factor. So, yeah, there are still issues with the Rockets' depth. Defensively, they kind of struggled to keep the Bulls off the glass. Robin Lopez had 11 rebounds, and Michael Carter-Williams at the point guard position had 9. The Rockets seemingly gave up every loose ball, every second chance to the Bulls. Although the rebounds at the end were actually kind of close. Bulls just out-rebounded Houston 53-48. James Harden having 12 certainly helped. Also give credit to Pat Beverly with 7. So whatever issues the Rockets had inside, you do give credit to the backcourt, guys like James Harden and Pat Beverly, for chipping in. Harden, of course, another ridiculous stat line overall, 42 points, 12 rebounds, and 9 assists. But the Bulls certainly made him work for it, 33 of 13 from the field. So while James Harden's still a fantastic player overall, it was not truly the efficient Harden. He had to go into a little bit of volume shooting mode in this one. And well, thankfully, he made enough shots late. That's one of those things you have to give him credit for. He had a great overall line against Atlanta on Thursday, but he didn't really make a ton of plays late in the fourth quarter. I think there are valid reasons for that. But it's safe to say there are some times when you want your star player to make plays in that moment, regardless of how often he has to shoot. Just go up and make a big shot when his team needed it. He did several times on Friday night against the Bulls, including a shake-and-bake mid-range shot. It's exactly what Brian Geltzeiler and so many of our guests here on the show have said. Harden got it with just over 30 seconds to go to tie the game, eventually forcing overtime. And then Eric Gordon in overtime was the guy who really took over, scoring many of his, 21 points to kind of finally push the Rockets past the Bulls and get them in a win that they really, really needed to push them to 37-17 on the year. Now, I think you guys know what I think about this team and their issues. The issues haven't gone away, but at least this buys them more time to hopefully let them rest up and see if maybe if fatigue is the cause, that gets better with 3 days off, almost 4 until they play Orlando on Tuesday night. But you guys have heard a lot from me this week. So tonight I've got a crossover episode with Sean Hyken. You know him as the host of Locked On Bulls. He also writes for Bleacher Report, beat writer, all things Chicago. So if you'll stick with me for just one moment, I'm going to get Sean on the phone and we will break down everything that happened Bulls-Rockets on Friday evening.
All right, so Ben, where does this rank in the weirdest games that you've watched in the year? Because it's pretty far up there for me, although the Hawks game with the Rockets last night was weird too.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It would be a lot weirder if the Rockets hadn't just blown a 20-point lead
in the fourth quarter literally 24 hours ago. But yeah, this is a pretty weird one. As far as the Rockets are concerned, it came at a good time because if you blow a 20-point lead one night, the best way to get over it is to somehow overcome an 8-point deficit with 2 minutes to go the next night. So in a way,
after
I guess...
blowing a 17-point lead in the first half anyway.
Yeah, I guess it evens out a little bit. But yeah, certainly you would like to think that the Rockets would have more success against the Bulls. You know, a lot of respect for the Bulls, but the Bulls without Jimmy Butler, this is the team, the Rockets at home.
You don't have to give a lot of respect to the Bulls when they don't have Jimmy Butler. Have you seen some of the on-off splits for Jimmy? Because it's pretty brutal when he's not on the floor.
Yeah, that's what I mean. The Bulls have had some statement wins, but yeah, without Jimmy Butler, this is a game where you would think the Rockets at home, especially coming out motivated after last night, would have a lot more success. And yet, really, I mean, the story of this game to me was just the fact that the Bulls just overwhelmed them inside. Obviously, Michael Carter-Williams from the perimeter had a lot of rebounds, but Robin Lopez, Taj Gibson, the Rockets just got nothing from Ryan Anderson. 0 points, 4 rebounds in 33 minutes. And so, yeah, the Bulls just basically sledgehammered them on the interior, seemed to get every loose ball, every rebound. And even though the Rockets had James Harden, that was enough to make this, well, pretty much Chicago's game, if not for a ridiculous comeback last couple of minutes of regulation.
Right. No, I would agree with you. And yeah, the MCW thing was just, I mean, yeah, this was probably his best, maybe his best game of the season. And like, this is coming, I don't know how much you've been following the Bulls in the last week or so, but he got a DNP in 4 straight games, just fell out of the rotation. And then when they beat Oklahoma City by 28 points on Wednesday, he just played 6 minutes of garbage time, so he essentially was out of the rotation then too. But like, and then he starts in this game and has, you know, one of his best games of the year. This is like, it's so, everything about it is just so weird.
Yeah, and he's one of those guys, it's weird, but in a way it's not, because he's the kind of guy, he's had a couple of big games against the Rockets before in his career. I think his length can really give teams like the Rockets fits, and you know that with someone like him, all it takes is a good shooting night, and if he gets hot, and of course tonight he was 11 of 18, then all of a sudden those other strengths are, you know, accentuated because he's just going to play more minutes. And yeah, the story for me, you know, obviously early on he hit some shots which made him playable, but then every loose ball for a stretch of the game, it felt like Robin Lopez, Taj Gibson, you know, those guys were getting the loose balls. But when it mattered, you know, in the fourth quarter, it seemed like Carter Williams was the one just getting tips to keep possessions alive, and that's what put the Bulls in a position to win it.
Well, that's something that he's always been able to do pretty consistently over throughout the year, because, you know, when he announced before the game that Jimmy wasn't going to be playing, I was thinking, okay, you know, they're probably going to either start McDermott or Zipser and just move and just keep Grant and Wade as the backcourt. But then, you know, he announces, okay, they're keeping Jarian in the lineup, and then they're starting MCW, and I was so confused. But then I kind of thought, okay, you know, MCW is a guy who is going to hound you on the defensive end. He isn't as good at that as Patrick Beverley is, but they sort of have that same, like, they're going to go at you, they're going to pick you up 92 feet, like, he's going to dive for every loose ball. So, like, I kind of understand, like, if you don't have Jimmy Butler, if Jimmy had been playing, obviously he would have been on Harden, but if he's not there, then I think MCW would have been the guy that you would stick in there and say, okay, he can at least stay in front of Harden, not that anybody can, really.
Yeah, I think this was it's a good matchup for him. And yeah, as I said, if he makes a couple of shots, all of a sudden those skills that he has every game, and it's just a matter of he can't make enough shots, well, all of a sudden, yeah, those are really playable, especially against a Rockets team that's struggling for, I would say, rim protection in general. The Rockets, they've survived rebounding this year, especially because they have pretty good rebounding guards. You mentioned Pat Beverley. I would say that, yeah, the MCW to Pat Beverley comparison, I can see that. Pat had 7 rebounds, Harden had 12, Ariza had 6. But the interior for the Rockets, Ryan Anderson, Clint Capella, Montrezl Harrell, we all know that's a little bit soft. The Rockets have certain ways to kind of counteract that. But tonight was a game, the Bulls, with their strength inside, definitely exposed it. Ryan Anderson, it's just one of those clunker games. You have Ryan shoot 0 of 7, 0 points. It's just one of those games. It is what it is for him. What I'm more curious about is your take on Clint Capella. Because for me, it seemed like, yeah, another game, the top line stats were really good. Capella had 14-9 in his 32 minutes. Yet when he's in the game, it felt like that Robin Lopez thoroughly outplayed him in terms of protecting the rim. And so that's where it's really tough for me to gauge with Clint. Like I said, big picture, he's very athletic. He works hard. He looks the part. But a game like tonight, there were stretches in which it looked like Robin Lopez and Taj Gibson absolutely controlled the paint. And so it's one of those games, you know, I guess you take the good with the bad. But, yeah, there's plenty in both directions.
Well, this is just the kind of matchup that Robin Lopez does well. And with him, it's sort of a thing of like, okay, you know, he'll get lit up by any big that can take you out on the perimeter. But with with a guy like Capella, who's more of a post player, who's a guy who's not going to like stretch it out as much, you know, Robin Lopez is probably going to win that matchup. That's kind of what that's the strength the advantage that he's given the Bulls. I'd say that's probably more about Robin Lopez than it is about any of Clint Capella's weaknesses. Because you know, I agree with you. I think I think Capella's numbers look good, and I think overall he's been pretty good, but that's just the kind of matchup that Robin Lopez is going to do well. And I should point out the Bulls lead the league in offensive rebounding rate. So that's just, I mean, everybody talks about how, oh, they can't shoot, they can't do anything. You know, their offense is so bad. They lead the league in offensive rebounding rate. So it's that and second chance points are the kinds of things that when they're playing well, that's what they're going to beat you with. And that's what they almost did tonight.
Yeah, and if not for Eric Gordon having his bounce back game, I think they would have. The real key to this from the Rockets' perspective is getting the contributions from someone other than James Harden. Harden's top line stats, of course, 42 points, 12 rebounds, 9 assists. It looks great, but, I mean, boy, did the Bulls make him work for those 42 points. Had to shoot it 33 times, a very un-Harden-like performance when you look at the efficiency. The key for the Rockets, this was the first bounce back game for Gordon in a while. Gordon had 21 points, 8 of 17 shooting, 5 of 10 from 3. One thing I've kind of been emphasizing on Locked On Rockets, my show, when the Rockets really started their kind of downward slide going into this game, they had lost 8 of 13. It's Trevor Ariza and Eric Gordon that are the probably 2A and 2B in terms of the second most important players after James Harden. Ariza, because of his defensive contributions, his versatility, you saw him with a big play against Dwayne Wade late in the game. And then Eric Gordon, who, with his ability to create, his ability to shoot, it's so hard to replicate that skill set if he's not on or if he's out injured. He missed 4 games in January. And even when Gordon's played, I had a stat. I looked up after the loss to Atlanta. Since January 6th, his last 12 games, Gordon had been shooting 37% from 37% overall, 25% from 3. And it's one of those things, whether it's fatigue, the Rockets have had some injuries, so certain guys have been overextended, or if it's the injuries, he has had minor issues with his toe, his ankle, and then his back. Whatever it was, Eric Gordon has not been Eric Gordon for the past month. And so Friday night was the first time that we have really seen that version of Eric Gordon, the guy who a month ago people thought was borderline all-star level. And yeah, it came at a really good time for the Rockets, because without that, I don't know where the Rockets muster the offense to beat the Bulls tonight. Because, yeah, Harden, yeah, he got his 42 points. He did it on 33 shots. So then you have to tip your hat to the Bulls for a pretty strong defensive performance.
How worried are you about the Rockets long-term with this slump? Do you think this is just a short-term thing?
I'll know a lot more after 4 games. It's one of those things, all logic tells me that it's short-term because, quite simply, they're missing shots. You look at some of the numbers, it's comical. I just read off Gordon's. Trevor Ariza, his last 9 games going into tonight, he had been shooting 24%. His last 4, he had been shooting 13%. Now, Trevor did hit a couple of big ones tonight. And then before, Clint Capella's come back in the last 2.5 weeks, but he missed a month with a fractured fibula. So the most logical, plausible explanation is that a lot of guys, when you factor in the injuries they have, Patrick Beverley's missed about a month of time, so is Clint Capella. It's not the deepest team in the world to begin with. And so now you have these guys uncharacteristically shooting poor, showing some regression defensively. The most plausible explanation is that there's just a little bit of fatigue. It's almost the All-Star break. The Rockets have played the most road games in the league. I think their overall number of games is near the top as well. So from a logic standpoint, this is something they should break through. But at some point, they've got to do it, because the stuff about the road games, the schedule, they've been at home for 3 games this week, and they lost that game to Atlanta last night when they had a 20-point lead, and they almost lost this one tonight. So it's one of those things, you know, the logic side of my brain says, yeah, they should figure it out. But when you see them lose to Atlanta with a 20-point lead and almost lose to Chicago without Jimmy Butler, it's one of those things, yes, all logic says they should turn it around, but it needs to start happening pretty quickly.
Right, and the beginning of this game looked like it was just kind of continuing that slump, because, you know, even though, you know, the Bulls end the first quarter leading by one, and I'm thinking, okay, this game could have gone a very different way if the Rockets weren't missing so many open shots. There was this one look, I forget who should have been his man, it might have been Mirotić, but there was nobody even close to Eric Gordon at the top of the key for a three, and he shot it, and he missed it, but it was just like, they were just getting so many good looks and missing them. And then the second quarter, when they kind of blew the game open a little bit, a lot of those same looks, and they just started going down.
I will say this was a game in which I did think they missed Nene. Nene's had a really good stretch for them over the past week. He played really well that game they won at Philadelphia. And so I think Nene, with his physicality, his back-to-the-basket game, that might have been a little bit better matchup for Robin Lopez, Taj Gibson in certain situations. So I think not having that half-court presence, as you were saying earlier, the matchups with Capella and Montrezl Harrell, that was the kind of game where the Bulls, I think up front, they knew they could kind of sledgehammer the Rockets, and to their credit, they executed that game plan. So yeah, it's one of those, it seems like a minor injury. Nene's 34 years old, he averages only about 15 minutes a game, but I think this was a particular matchup in which they really could have used him.
Yeah, I think so too. So I want to ask you, since you were in the building, what was like? Tell me a little bit about the scene for the Yao Ming jersey retirement, because they showed that on the feed here in Chicago, like on the TV broadcast. I thought it was awesome. I thought his speech was great. It was, kind of reminded me a lot of his Hall of Fame speech. He has kind of an underrated sense of humor. But like, what was the whole scene like?
Yeah, really electric. People in Houston love Yao. The thing that you don't realize about Yao until you spend a lot of time with him, because it's very understated, but he has a dynamic personality.
He does.
He is the kind of guy that everyone wants to pull for. So it's one of those things, it's hard to describe it unless you follow him on a regular basis, because a lot of the jokes, they're so subtle and they're just so well delivered. He doesn't have the flashy, over-the-top personality, but if you actually listen to him, It's a little bit like some of those Spurs players, the way they relate to Tim Duncan, you know, and that if you're not really around him all that often, you don't get it, and it might seem boring, but when he's your guy and when you actually see him on a day in, day out basis, like if you're covering or following the team, then yeah, he's really engaging, and he's a guy that was just incredibly fun to root for, because yes, he's big. But from a talent standpoint, he obviously always had some deficiencies. In some ways, that height was almost a weakness for him.
He was so skilled, though.
Yeah, and he was never the fastest guy, and he was always a little bit unassuming. But his skills, yeah, were so good that he worked through all of that. And so he was just, you know, when you think of Yao, you think of a good leader, you think of a good guy in the community, and you think of a hard worker. And so you look at a town like Houston, I'm sure it's the same way Chicago, just fans around here just absolutely relate to a guy like that that just does so much through hard work and then has a really kind of, you know, humble personality, just so easygoing, and so fans relate to that an awful lot.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking back to his Hall of Fame speech, which I thought was great. It was probably the best one besides Iverson. And then the podcast that he did with Woj like a year ago or something,
yeah,
like that was really good too. And I still, my favorite Yao, this is a totally random thing, but like my favorite Yao, it's this image that has just stuck with me for 8 or 9 years, I guess it's been 9 years now, but the opening ceremonies of the Beijing Olympics in 2008, the Chinese procession went last because they were the host country, and Yao was walking next to this little kid who couldn't have been older than like 7 or 8, and this kid literally goes up to Yao's ankle because he's so massive. And that image, like, I don't know why, but that image has always just stuck with me. And it's one of those things, like, always you'll see photos of like at the Hall of Fame stuff, like they showed pictures of him with Shaq, and he makes Shaq look small. It never gets old, like seeing pictures of Yao next to not even normal-sized people, people who are bigger than normal-sized people, and he still looks tiny next to him. It's crazy.
Yeah, yesterday they had some ceremony at Houston City Hall in which they called it Yao Ming Day. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they had the mayor of Houston, Sylvester Turner, and the CEO of the Rockets, Tad Brown, take a picture with them, do their little, you know, political thing. And yeah, it just looked like those were two, you know, munchkins next to him. You know, it's just comical how he makes people look. But yeah, even in a league where you see guys that are 6'9", 6'10", with regularity, compared to Yao, it's night and day. And it's one of those things, I covered him for years in person and I got used to it. And now, even compared to guys like Clint Capella, it's a huge difference. You see Yao walk in a room and he just dwarfs people. But yeah, the best part about him is that, yeah, he does all that, but his presence, he's so unassuming. He's not the guy that you think, well, this guy is 7'5", over 300 pounds, and he thinks that he is dominant and has a sense of arrogance. No,
he's not like Shaq. He's not like Shaq at all.
Right. The fact that he's been so unassuming, that's part of what endears him to people. Yeah, my favorite moments, well, yeah, a couple. My favorite, when they played the Lakers in 09, and that was a series that obviously the Rockets could have won if not for Yao ultimately injuring his foot. But game one in that game, they were up by 8 or 10 points in the fourth quarter, and he bumped knees with someone. And he went back to the locker room. No one really thought it was that serious of an incident, but everyone knew Yao had an injury history. It wasn't the foot, but still, he went back there. They had an 8-10-point lead. They probably could have grinded out the game regardless, and you could see him in the hallway. He got down there, stopped Keith Jones, the Rockets trainer, and basically started flexing his leg against the wall to prove he was good to go, went back in the game because he knew if he was out, what kind of statement that would go. You would have all these distractions. You would have all this doubt. And so he wanted to make a statement. He went out there, and not only did he play, he went in the very first possession, then hit a 20-footer that pretty much put the Lakers away for good. So, yeah, that's one of those that always sticks out. And then the other thing, I said during Twitter, it's the most random thing, but when I think of Yao, before anything else, I think of a big man, 7'5", who shot 85% from the free throw line. And the Rockets, back when Yao was their centerpiece, he was the guy that Rick Adelman and Jeff Van Gundy chose more often than not for technical free throws, the best free throw shooter on the team. And so it's kind of an inspiring story because especially here in Houston, there's been a long list of big men that do not shoot free throws well. Obviously, Dwight Howard and Josh Smith, Clint Capella to an extent now. And so a lot of times you hear excuses, well, they're bigger, they have big hands, it's harder. And I'm not saying that's irrelevant, but Yao was a great example. Yeah, even a guy that big, if you have the right work ethic, if you focus on the technique, him shooting free throws that well, that was, it seems like a little thing, but it was, especially here in Houston, it was always one that really resonated with me.
Yeah, I've never understood the whole the thing where big men just can't shoot free throws. But yeah, that was something that Yao was always good at. But I mean, you mentioned him hitting a 20-footer in that game that you were talking about against the Lakers. He was so skilled. I mean, he could step, you know, he was a big man. He could obviously dominate people in the post because he was so much bigger than everybody. But, you know, he could step out. He could hit that 20-footer. He had three-point range. He was an incredible passer for someone his size, too. Like, he's a guy, like, I think he would have gone down as one of the all-time greats if he had been able to stay healthy a little bit longer.
Yeah, it's a real shame because offensively he adapted. That's what I think about with Yao, and of course it speaks to his work ethic.
Because he had three-point range. If he was healthy, I think he could have adapted to the current NBA where you want big men to be able to shoot. I think he could have been able to fit into that if his feet had held up.
Oh, absolutely. He continually improved his free throws because one of the strategies against him, number one, he was obviously fouled a lot, but secondly, teams started after his first couple of years and they saw how dominant he was in the post, they started to really front him a lot. So he realized that he had to step out in space, and so he first expanded his game out to 15, 16 feet. By then, his career, he expanded out to 20, 22. It was just a matter of work ethic for him, and as we said earlier with the free throws, he never accepted that, well, because I'm big, there are certain things I can't do. He just found a way to adapt, and he was never going to be an elite defensive player. Now, he was a pretty good defensive player, but he had certain limitations with his size, athleticism, or lack thereof. He was always going to be, at best, pretty good defensively. But offensively, yeah, he's one of the most skilled players that I've ever seen. And yeah, if only his feet would have held up a little bit more, then yeah, I think he would have gone down, yeah, as just a revolutionary big from an offensive standpoint. And especially in the game today, the one thing that I'm really struck by with Yao, I can't believe I didn't think of this earlier, but Yao, when he played, this was back against Dwight Howard when Dwight was probably the best big man in the NBA at the time. Because really,
was this the same year? Was this the year they went to the finals?
Yeah, 2005 onward, Shaq was kind of in his decline.
Right.
So really from 2005 through 2009, the last 5 years of Yao's career, Dwight was the dominant big in the NBA. And if you watch any of those games that Yao played Dwight, go look at the stats on Basketball Reference. Yao dominated him. And it was just a reminder, and it's one thing that's kind of sad is, you know, and that's to take nothing away from Dwight. Dwight is a heck of a player. I respect and think the world of him. But that's how skilled Yao was, that even someone like Dwight, that's an incredible defensive player, probably the best big of his generation, and yet that's how good Yao was, that he dominated him. And so, yeah, it's a real shame, because if he would have lasted longer, not only would we have just seen the same level of play we saw for, you know, the last 6 or 7 years that he was healthy, but also it was in an era where today there are so few really good big men in the league. Now the league has bounced back the last couple of years. You are seeing a new crop of young big men, so it's not exactly fair to say that. But over the past decade, I would say Yao definitely would have been up there in the top, the top two or three big men in the entire league.
Yeah, I agree. So on that note, I think we've covered about everything there is to cover in this game. That was some of those calls were a little bit weird at the end, both ways.
Yeah. Yeah.
The one where Harden just, you know, jumps on MCW's back and tackles him and calls on MCW, and then I didn't see where the ball touched Trevor Ariza's foot on that kickball where the Bulls got the ball back, where got the 14 seconds left on the shot clock instead of one. That was a little bit weird too.
Yeah, and quite frankly, so was the Harden technical. I think that's one of those where it's pretty clear there was no intent.
No. I didn't think that elbow.
You might argue that the flail was a little exaggerated, but I think there's a time and a place.
Right. I don't even know if there was a foul on Zipser on that play.
Well,
that,
like, yeah, you could argue that.
Like, but the thing is, like, you could see you could argue, like, okay, maybe that was just like payback for flopping or whatever because he was flailing trying to get the call. But like, when his elbow hit Zipser, I did not. They showed the replay a million times on the Bulls broadcast, thinking that trying to make the point that, oh, he's going to get teed up for this. I didn't see it. Him deciding, I'm going to throw an elbow. It just looked like incidental contact to me.
Well, it was awfully, ticky-tack call. Both teams, I noted, were in the bonus in the fourth quarter by the 8-minute
mark. I saw that too, and it's just like.
Yeah, really quick. And James Harden was not even in the game. You know, you think the Rockets are in the bonus. You think, well, James Harden's racked up a lot of fouls. No, the first 4 minutes, James Harden wasn't even playing. So that just shows you how ticky-tack it was. And yeah, that one.
And especially Jimmy Butler's a guy that gets to the line a lot. He's getting to the line more than he ever has in his career, and he wasn't even playing tonight. So just for, like, you know, for the Bulls to be drawing that many fouls, they don't have a lot of other guys that draw a ton of fouls the way that Jimmy does. But for them to be getting to the line, it's like, okay, maybe they need to chill out a little bit on both sides.
It was just very tightly called. And yeah, the sequence with Harden with the technical, the first one didn't have to be a foul either. I just objected to, a technical in that time and place for something that was obviously inadvertent. And yeah, the vibe in the Toyota Center was a little weird because it was one of those games, I don't know if you saw it, the Rockets-Hawks last night, the Rockets had a quote-unquote apology in the last two-minute report. Down one with just over a minute to go, Harden was driving to the basket, and it was one of those plays, Dwight Howard kind of put his arm out, and he made contact with Harden's face, and the Rockets were in the bonus, and you could tell what the official was thinking. The official was thinking, well, I don't really want to send Harden to the line to give the Rockets the lead on this kind of soft contact. So what he did, but the ball after that went out of bounds off of Harden. So what he did, his instinct, he just said Rockets ball out of bounds. Well, it's the last 2 minutes, so you know what happens after that. They go to the replay booth, and they can't review the foul part. They can just review the ball. And Atlanta ends up getting the ball because, yep, it was off James, and that's the only part that they can review. They can't review the foul. And, of course, the Rockets end up losing that game. So it was one of those on a back-to-back. Yeah, the crowd at Toyota Center was especially a little bit agitated about the officials, kind of with that as the backdrop.
Were the crowds a little bit weird the last couple of nights? Because they look pretty empty because I feel like there's not going to be a lot of traffic downtown with all the Super Bowl stuff going on. So
well, quite the
I'm sure that's probably what contributed to it.
Quite the opposite, because the setup in Houston is because traffic downtown is crazy because Houston's really built up the downtown district, the area around Energy Stadium for the Super Bowl. That's basically just the game itself. Everything else is funneled downtown. Houston's had a ton of downtown development in the last 10 years or so. So that's really good. But the downside is that people had a tough time getting to the game.
That's what I'm saying. That's why the crowd looked a little bit empty because other Super Bowl stuff was going on. So it's like
The Rockets were so desperate tonight. I think you'll appreciate this. Normally, I'm sure beers are the same in Chicago. You go to a Bulls game, you know, any beer is going to cost $9 or $10 for a fan. The Rockets actually had a promo tonight for fans that got there between 5:30 and 6:45, dollar beer. Which is incredibly, you know, an NBA team hates to do that.
So how do they prove that you got there at a certain? Or do they just stop? Would they just like you could only buy them in that point, or like would they?
Yeah, they tell the concession people to cut it off. But
okay,
yeah, yeah, that's the thing. That's how desperate they are. And, you know, it's kind of a fine line to walk for them, because they want the gate receipts from Super Bowl. You know, there's been a lot of celebrities. Then you add in the Yao retirement night. You know, there's been a ton going on around there. But at the same time, yeah, you get the gate receipts. The resale market might be really good. But then you have a tough time physically getting those fans into the arena and getting into their seats before the second half of the game, just because there's so much going on. So, yeah, there's no easy answer. But
right, and if you're a Rockets fan that doesn't really care about football and you want to go to a game, you're not going to pick the game that's, like, in the middle of the downtown, in the middle of Super Bowl weekend, because the traffic is going to be terrible. I was not to get too inside baseball here, but, like, you know, I was, about a month ago, I was talking to my bosses about, like, which games on the Bulls' current 6-game road trip I was going to do. And I was hoping to get to go to the Houston one, because I wanted to see James Harden in person more than just the one time when they come here. But
sure.
The hotel situation was just crazy. Like, it was just like the closest hotel I could get, like, a reasonable rate at would have been, like, 10 miles out of Houston, and so it would have just been a disaster. I'm actually picking the trip up in Sacramento on Monday.
Yeah, it's crazy, and so, yeah, if you're a basketball fan, this has been kind of weird. Tonight helped a little bit because of the Yao retirement. It got a little bit more of the true basketball vibe. But, yeah, the last two nights, it's been a little bit less basketball and more just celebrity. And so I'm sure, you know, it's great to have the Super Bowl here. There's a lot of stuff going on. But I think everybody around here will be happy when, you know, the next home game is Tuesday, that all that stuff is gone and it's just back to, you know, a normal Rockets game at Toyota Center rather than all the extracurricular stuff that's this week.
It's a little unfortunate that they, you know, that the Yao stuff couldn't be, not inside. And I get why they did it right now, because they want to do it to coincide with Chinese New Year. But, like, the fact that happens to then coincide also with the Super Bowl, where nobody's going to be at the game and, like, nobody's really talking about the Rockets because everybody's talking about the Super Bowl stuff being in town. Like,
right.
And I get that you want to do it this year because, like, I almost feel like the move, and I get they wanted to do it this season because Yao just got elected to the Hall of Fame, but I almost feel like the move would have been to wait until next season and do it, if you want to time it to Chinese New Year, do it next year when you can do it this time of year and not have the Super Bowl.
Yeah, it was definitely a weird dynamic with everything going on. I think in theory, it's one of those things that looks great on paper because you see all this stuff and you say, wow, these games are going to be really hyped. Just think about, you know, the secondary market and how exclusive this is going to be. But then it's one of those things that when you get to the logistics of actually carrying it out, it can be a little bit too busy, I think is what you're saying. And that's actually how it kind of played out tonight, I would say. I think it'll be much better. Yeah, you get to next week, and then you just get back to everyday basketball, that kind of crowd.
Yeah. So, who do the Rockets play next?
I'm trying to think. Who is Tuesday? I know they have 3 days off. That's the one thing I've been looking at because they've had so many. I know it's another Eastern Conference team, Orlando. That's right.
Okay, that's the Magic are bad.
Yeah,
the Magic are awful.
Yeah, so it's a good opportunity. Yeah, the good thing for the Rockets, they've got a nice little stretch here before the All-Star break. Yeah, Orlando, Charlotte, Phoenix, Miami. So even though they've had some issues of late, yeah, the next four games, all against not particularly great teams, 3 of the 4 at home. So they've got a nice little chance to kind of get right before the All-Star break.
Yeah, the Bulls are kind of the opposite. They have 4 games left on this road trip, including the Warriors on Wednesday. And then when they get home, they have 2 more home games before the All-Star break, and they're Toronto and Boston.
Oh, geez.
So, and then if you look at their March schedule, because right after the All-Star break, they play Phoenix, and then they play Cleveland on the back-to-back the next night. And then their March schedule starts off with, like, Clippers, Warriors, Rockets, Grizzlies, Jazz. It's like 6 or 7 really good teams in a row.
Yeah. We can relate to that. Yeah, the Rockets' January was just a grind. They had 17 games in the month and just comedic back-to-back. It's 5-game road trip to end it up. And so, yeah, the Rockets have kind of the same thing coming up in March where they've got a nice February, only 2 road games. And so, yeah, people in Houston are just kind of crossing their fingers because the hope is that a lot of the issues are fatigue-related. As I said, it makes sense. And so they've got a nice chance to kind of get right, start building some confidence. But, yeah, if not, March is going to be really brutal. It's a tough schedule, yeah, for the Rockets and it sounds like for the Bulls as well.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think that's probably a good place to wrap up on. You want to tell people where they can find your stuff?
Sure. Yeah, I'm Ben DuBose. You can follow me on Twitter, @BenDuBose. show is Locked on Rockets. You can follow the show at Locked on Rockets. And yeah, you can find us pretty much anywhere you can find Locked on Bulls. Audio Boom, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play. Just, yeah, search for Locked on Rockets.
Five-star reviews. Leave five-star reviews.
Please do, yes.
And then obviously you can find Locked on Bulls on iTunes, Stitcher, Audio Boom, TuneIn, Google Play. Follow us on Twitter at Locked on Bulls, Facebook, Locked on Bulls, LockedOnBulls@gmail.com with advertising inquiries, that kind of stuff.
Yep.
Thanks for doing this, Ben.
Yep, and LockedOnRockets@gmail.com for the same advertising inquiries as well.
Give both of us money.
Yep. On that note, have a good weekend, everybody.
Yeah, thanks for listening, guys.